This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 21st of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is Native State and Communication. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
I'd like to talk to you now on the second lecture of October the 21st, 1955, on the subject of the modus operandi back of processing itself. Now, we know that the ability to create a not-know places an individual in command of the subject of not-know. We know that. So let us examine then, not only why an individual creates not knows, but what pursues from that point. Now, we have native state, some level of rather wide, able knowingness, you see. We won't say it's an absolute because we find these absolutes are practically unobtainable. We've known that for a long time. But certainly, the native state of a thetan is a potentiality, at least, of great knowingness, or it is knowingness of anything and everything. Now, we won't say then that it's an absolute, but we will say that it certainly seems to approach that point. In order to have game, the thetan postulates a not know. Why does he postulate a not know? Well, evidently, not know is intimately related to the creation of time. If a person had a total knowingness, he would have then a totality of understanding the subject of time, too, and he wouldn't have any time, evidently. So he postulates a not knowingness in agreement one way or another with other thetans, and we have a not knowingness of certain time periods, such as future and, in moderation, past. And we close out future entirely and close it out more and more. We, of course, are more and more closely situated to base time. And thus everything and everybody can go off tickety-tick very nicely. Now we look at the past and we discover that not knowingness about the past throws out of existence any and all, he would like to believe, solid forms concerning the past. But when an individual's not knowingness goes over totally on an automatic principle, he then has a condition whereby his not knowingness begins to swamp him. Past then does begin to regain some of the mass it has already had. And we discover that his pictures of the past can appear in the present with the greatest of ease. And we have many systems by which pictures of the past can be handled. But these pictures of the past, remember, are backed by a not knowingness, ability to not know the past. And this ability to not know, or this not knowingness, degenerates on an automaticity. The individual goes out of control of it, you might say, possibly because he wants to. And then we get him pulling in facsimiles. Now, by its very term and word, facsimile means picture of or in lieu of. It means something instead of. And instead of the past, he pulls in a picture of the past. And these pictures, as he has gone across the past track already on this fanciful system of not knowingness called time, opening up a pinpoint of the present consistently and continually, he then gets a condition there by which he is saying he knows parts of the past. Now, know, axiom 36, is, of course, a second postulate. And being a second postulate, it has the force behind it of not know. Now, it's a lower harmonic of the total no, but it is knowing something. And knowing this something, an individual is then in the interesting position of holding back the confusion of his own and others' creation, this not knowingness, which is that and confusion for our purposes is the same thing. And he holds this back by knowing something. He doesn't alter the not knowingness ordinarily. He never touches this, but it has the dynamic thrust, you might say, the power of specific knowledge or data or items as an effect is derived from the postulate not know. The second postulate derives its strength from the first postulate. So we have the thetan moving from native state of cause over to second postulate knowingness, which is an effect. And as you look at a wall, you say, I know that wall is a wall. And you have actually pulled in upon yourself something. Get the idea? Knowingness about something is an effect operation. So the second postulate is an effect postulate. And now if we not is it and say, I know something, now I'm going to forget it. Now I have forgotten what I knew. We've moved on the track and we've not ised this effect knowingness. Second postulate is effect knowingness. And we've not ised effect knowingness. And we start to gather up some of the darndest systems and thingamabobs and so forth, forgetter mechanisms of one kind or another. And we start to get the phenomenon of solidity in the reactive bank. We've not ised. See, this thing was knowingness, and maybe we even put it into picture form. You see, this effect knowingness tends to be solid. And as we get into the picture aspect of it, we then go so far sometimes as to forget the pictures by not ising them. We press the energy of these pictures out of existence by saying it does not exist at this moment. And of course that is a lie too, third postulate, but it's less of a lie than to say then that another system is going to permit you to remember this. You see, now you've altered the not isness and this becomes remembering. Now what are you doing? You're recalling something that you have forgotten, which you once knew, which you postulated that you didn't know, which you knew anyway. You follow this sequence now as we move from the fourth postulate back to the native state. And now we wonder why somebody starts to have trouble with his bank and it all starts to get solid. There's a line in Shakespeare about to sport to see the engineer hoist by his own petard. And I suppose that it's an enjoyable thing to see somebody blown up by the fuse he lit. But this is certainly what a thetan's doing. And the fuse in this instance is, of course, not know. And as we light the fuse of not know, we say, well, I'm not going to know about that now. I'm not going to know about that. I'm going to be real cute here. And I'm going to say, I'm not going to know about all of that. Now I'm real smart. Now I'm going to know about that. Now we're in the time stream on this subject, and this subject's going flowing along at a uniform rate, and here we go. Here we go. Now I'm going to know about that, and now I'm going to forget that I know about that. And I'm a real smart boy, and I'm going to convince myself time really exists by saying, well, now I remember when I was a boy. See? I've got an idiocy going, which was what? Started by the thetan himself. And when he gets into a jammed bank, his almost total effect, and obsessively starts to remember things, which then occlude along about the fifth postulate. You see, I'm occluded is the fifth postulate. He gets himself into the remarkable state of being hoist by his own petard. Only trouble is there's no explosion. It's usually just a dull crunch. Now he says, how am I going to get out of this mess? And there hasn't been any real method for a long time. Except maybe death or something, but death didn't get one out of this. So actually one could say, for as far as we know, and as far as we have any record, there hasn't been any method of getting out of all this for 76 trillion years. See how we do this. You know, the boy actually, when he starts to study geometry, has to postulate that he doesn't know anything about geometry to become the effect of knowingness about geometry. And yet, if you take some savage in the Gullaby Isles and you start to show him these patterns and how the angles compare, he says, I know a lot of that. That's silly. And you say, no, no, you really don't. This is a very specific subject. Very, very specific subject. The actuality is that there are theorems and so forth. So we get a specialization of this subject of geometry. Now, it really isn't safe to do that with any subject if you lose entirely your command of the ability to create not knowingness. Now, we get back to the fact that Scientology is a safe subject to study if you study it. It's a safe subject to use if you use it. And it is oddly enough, and remarkably enough, probably an only one, the only safe subject that man's ever had that was completely without real liability in the aggregate. But of course, we could partly know it, and we could only halfway use it, and we might as well be holding a pistol that bears Spanish proof marks and fire it. Of course, it rather blows up and maybe takes one's hand and half of his face with it. Now, why would it be necessary for anybody to study not knowingness? Well, I suppose you're at the 10 to the 800 millionth power postulate. I suppose that's about where we are, more or less. In other words, a wheeze down the track. And we've just kept reversing this idiocy and oddity of not know it, know it, forget it, remember it, occlude it, system, 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 system. Now when we start to not know something without a rather specialized activity, the bank's liable to swamp us. There's just so darn much of it. And an individual says, well, I can't tolerate that much confusion, that's all. Well, now, he's quite honest and sincere in this, although he was hoist by his own petard. He nevertheless is being hoist. All right. It's all very well to say it's all in the fellow's mind. But what I generally say and ask in reply to that remark is, well, it's all right. You are too. So's your shirt. I don't quite get this. Well, all right, if this is the case, then we must examine a little bit further why a Thetan's doing this, anyhow. Well, we have said many times, and so far I have not run across anything to controvert this, that the Thetan is playing a game. He must be playing a game of some sort, which has become a bit too grim for him when he feels very bad about this game. Because the game obviously does have liability of one kind or another. Thetan, by his own considerations, tailors up a sufficiency of liability and mass to pack him in and do interesting things to him. But they get too interesting after a while. Matter of fact, they get fixative. And so the reason he not knows something is sort of play a game, be able to look at things, and be able to participate with his fellows and so forth. It's an activity, then, which is apparently superior to this business of being in a native state. See? When we talk all we want to about let's all go back to the swamps or nirvana, pardon me, the pool of theta or something, the dismal swamp. But you know, it doesn't have any appeal until people are just so apathetic that it's enough to half kill them, just the thought of living another instant. Therefore, this native state is apparently not a totally desirable mechanism. Otherwise, some Thetan, long before he was hoisted by his own petard, would have said to hell with this game, and while he still knew how to do it, not knowed himself into an ability to not know, and would have again been in his native state. It's as simple as that. So we are faced with the possibility that we can't say that everyone has just been trapped against his will. It sounds rather odd because it leaves no villain anyplace. And that is the great oddity in studying people. We don't find any villain anyplace. We find that bad intentions come about by individuals assigning bad intentions to others and then swapping valence and getting out of their own beingness into the racked up, postulated badness of a situation, you see. And we find no badness, really, this is true, we find no badness anywhere unless it has been mocked up for somebody. And then he skidded into it. So badness is a consideration. And as far as goodness is concerned, we could say, well, goodness then wouldn't have any reality unless you understand it against badness. And if badness is a consideration about or against somebody else, then naturally goodness would be too. And that's not the truth. That doesn't happen to follow. Because they're a first and second postulate manifestation. Badness and goodness are first and second postulate. Now, we've got native state, and then we've got so forth. And once we get down the line a ways, we can still say native state, first postulate, second postulate, third postulate, fourth postulate, anywhere we want to on the concatenation of line, and say this, so far as we know, was his native state with relationship to geometry, and then this was his first postulate, saying he did not know geometry, and this is his second postulate, now saying that he is now going to learn geometry. See, this could have occurred anywhere along the line with regard to some specific subjects, and so it can occur below the level of knowingness, certainly, but very, very close to it on this subject of badness and goodness, you see. And the way an individual gets to be bad is a first and second postulate manifestation. So his first postulate is rather uniformly, I'll do all the good I can, you know. I'll improve all this and make a universe, and we'll make it all decent and swell. And then his second postulate is rather uniformly, and this is odd, you see. Maybe some kind of a survival mechanism at work here, but it is nevertheless odd that the badness comes in as a second postulate. This is a curiosity. He says, it's now bad, or I'm bad, or there is something bad about it. Mostly because he's made a postulate which was quite native to him. There's something good about it. So maybe it's all bad, you see. But nevertheless, the postulate that's alive is all good. Maybe there is nothing to know. And maybe all knowingness is just made up. This could be, too, you see. So native state could be dull stupidity. Only it doesn't demonstrate itself to be dull stupidity at all. As we boost a fellow up the line, he gets closer and closer to native state, and that is what he's getting closer and closer to, while we find he gets brighter and brighter. So we must assume that the don't know is an artificiality stated by himself, and so it is. Well, now, it isn't necessarily true that all goodness is something stated by himself. Not necessarily true, but it just happens to work out that way in practice. So an individual evidently has his first postulate about his intentions, good intentions, and then this got stopped with a badness. See? And we get this badness as an artificiality. It's a second postulate, and it's a lie. Because it works that way. We can't locate, really, any badness that isn't powered by goodness. And if we don't look at this principle, we just don't understand what people are all about. The badness is powered by goodness. And we see this curious mechanism. We see somebody starts out to heal somebody. And he works him over, and nice to him, and tries to help him out. And doggone, this person won't get well. You know? And he finally starts getting mad at him. He finally says, well, the dickens with him. And he says, he's a fake. He's no good, you know? He's a villain. He's wicked. And we have somebody damning and raving about somebody in particular. We can be absolutely sure that on the backtrack, this individual started to help somebody or something, and this person refused or this thing refused to be helped. And then we get a bad opinion of this. You see? Although one never should speak on the first dynamic at all, let's take the cracks I make about psychiatry. Well, it must follow that I tried to help psychiatry at one time or another. And really, the only reason I'm mad at them is because they refuse to be helped, and they're still in their swamp. Now, let's go further. Psychiatry, in its bad actions, and many of its actions today, can be considered, from our viewpoint, now that we know a little bit more about it, to be rather thoroughly bad. See? I mean, because they do not produce a cure. Psychiatry runs around telling everybody how they cure everybody. It even became part of a bill of the United States House of Representatives that 75% of the people going into the better institutions were cured. I mean, this is a stated law of the United States now. I mean, what a lie, see? I mean, this is for the seagulls. That's a fact. They couldn't demonstrate this, but they should never use a word like cure anyhow. And yet there it is. And that bill was drafted by psychiatrists and passed by the U.S. House of Representatives and by the United States Senate by consent. It also provides millions of dollars worth of research funds, which will only be handed around and passed into guys' hands by the APA. You talk about favored legislation, but it contains this lie right in the middle of it. Just an outright bald-faced lie. And it's unsupportable. We had a chap who was a chemical engineer, statistician. And this man researched all the records of psychiatry to discover what psychiatry was really doing. And he found an awful lot of words, but he could find no evidence of anybody having been materially assisted by psychiatry. He did find people being sent home, and psychiatry writing in their books, see? Psychiatry writes in his books. This person is cured or something, and then we find a readmission of the person after 3 weeks, and then darndest entries, you know? And we look in this, and their remissions or successes from a prefrontal lobotomy and electric shock are all almost the same. They release them. He was released, you see? And we then say, well, something must have been done for him. And then we find that the fellow either went home and murdered his wife or burned the house down or did something wild like this and was readmitted or got killed or got picked up and thrown in some other institution or bumped himself off or simply went into a complete spin. And this is the track of this. And yet we find this is law of the land. Now, how the devil this could be, how could anybody be standing around and even believing it in all the popular magazines that this brutality and savagery of treatment, unquote, would be helping anybody? Somebody must be operating here at a real nutty level. Well, how'd they ever get into that nutty level? They must have started to assist their fellow man. And then they must have failed. And now they've gone nuts. See? You get the idea? Their fellow man must have said, because you were operating with bad people in the insane, you must be bad. And their fellow man refused to be assisted. And so, somebody spun. Because, you see, it's gone again over on another harmonic. We're down into the third postulate, which is the only reason I'm describing this at all. See, we're down into the third postulate on this subject. Which is to say, what we are doing is good. And the fourth postulate is, of course, we're recalling ourselves only bad. Either once more, you've got this imbalance. Do you follow me? Now, let's take survive and succumb. And let's find that survive is native state. And there's a little bit of wonder about this, of exactly how this fits, and I'm not giving this to you as a precise datum. But there is no such thing as a continued survival for a thetan in a native state. because there's no time through which to survive. Well, his first statement is that he's going to survive, and his second statement is he's going to succumb. And his second postulate is succumb. And the unreal postulate there is succumb, although it's evidently some kind of a harmonic on the native state, just as knowingness is a harmonic on the native state, just as badness is a harmonic on the native state. Well, there's just no telling exactly what a fellow would wind up in if he said, I am totally and only native state. And then we start to classify exactly what is native state on the time track and in terms of our own values. See, we'd go out of communication because these conditions are the product of first postulate, second postulate, third postulate, fourth postulate, don't you see? These are our evaluations. So what is native state? Well, this person certainly would be aware of being alive. We can certainly agree on that, but he also, at the same time, he wouldn't be aware of anything. You get it? It must be something like that. Now, I'm saying it must be something like that because although somebody might have had a preclear assume it sooner or later, he, of course, never talked to him afterwards. For somebody to assume total native state would be for somebody to back totally out of the game, and we get right down with that to what is the game then? How does one know one is playing a game? And what is the principal game an individual is playing? He's playing a game called communication. And that is the game he's playing. And then, in order to have communication, he has reasons why. And that is the significance of the game. But the game is really communication. The pay of the game is communication, just as the winning team always gets all the applause and the losing team doesn't. So the winning team wins. Wins what? And you could say, well, a bit of ribbon, a little pigskin to hang on the dean's or the coach's wall or something. Certainly nothing very finite, but when we reduce it all down, we find that there was a reality there. The reality was communication. Their play was communicated to the spectators who were observing it and to the other team, more intimately to the other team, and then to the spectators. I imagine games after a while began to tolerate spectators and then eventually began to tolerate people talking about spectators. I think that's the end product. You no longer talk about the game, you talk about the spectators, the columnists. For fashions in the United States are about as far south as you can go. They don't talk about the marriage, they talk about what everybody wore who was looking at the marriage. You know, they don't even recite what the bride wore anymore, you see. Talking about the spectators. And Prince Charming was there and so forth, you know. You get the idea, as we drift away from the game, we really aren't drifting away from the game if we consider the game just in our own terms of two sides to a football match. See, we're not really then detouring away from this game. Because the game, at no time, is anything but communication. And as long as somebody talks about something somewhere, a game is in progress. Got it? And the way you know a game is in progress, if somebody's talking to somebody somewhere. See? See that? And if people are doing something or talking back or communicating in reverse, we know a game's in progress of some kind or another. Now, completely aside from the motives of this game and the reasons of this game, there's only one real worry about the game. And this is a real worry. That the game will cease. And that is a worry. People worry about that. And then what would be the cessation of the game? Well, the cessation of any given game would be the end of communication with or about that game. That would be the end of game, would be an end of communication about blank, you know, about anything. That would be an end of game. Nobody talks about it anymore, so that's the end of game. You know then when you've reached the end of game at any moment. So nobody's talking about it anymore. As long as people are talking about it, however, a game's in progress. And as long as anybody is talking anywhere with others, and they're talking, Two, boy, you got a game in progress. Now, as we look this over, we discover then how we can tell when a game is ending. People are stopping talking. They're not talking as much. The level of communication at any given moment in any society is a direct index in ratio to the amount of communication that has been in that society, to the vitality still extant in the society. We can measure the vitality of the society at once and instantly by measuring the amount of talk about that is in the society. That is the criteria. Quite important. And if a society stops talking to a society, the game is going by the boards. The vitality in the society, the interest in the game, must be waning very markedly. The value of a game is really not dependent upon the velocity of particles. Some people make this mistake. They feel the velocity of the particles in the game measure the game. This is not right. It is the amount of communication which the game will support which measures the value of the game. You got it? The amount of communication that game will support. All right. Now, knowing this, we can look at a couple other factors which are very important, and that is that talk is pay. Communication is pay. What pay is there? Communication. That's the pay. One draws his salary in order to further communicate. Doesn't matter how the pay is handed over or in what form it is in. Actually, it is as good as a salary as it will buy the opportunity to communicate one way or the other. The opportunity for communication. If, for instance, doubtful if anybody ever goes to a show to watch or enjoy the show. That's interesting, isn't it? But one goes to the show to a large degree to sometimes to complete the other side of the cycle. He also has been in shows way back when and so on. He's balancing out things. You could say to be entertained, to have interest and so forth. But he goes to the show to have communication. And a more valuable part of the communication is this interesting thing. He's got a show now as a subject for more communication. And he paid in his, well, I don't know, what is one of the lower class seats in a theater today? 18 pounds, isn't it something like that? For in the United States, they're getting up toward the optimum of $500 or $600 a theater seat. They're going in that direction. It sounds wild, but whenever a decent show is filmed, today you go down to go into it, and you look up there, and it says, this is a roadshow edition of this particular film. And it's your admission, general admission, $2.50. It's getting there. It's getting there. Used to be $1.25 per road show. In other words, this subject matter is becoming dearer and dearer for some reason or other, because it's becoming more and more important. But after we've been to the show, you see, you've gone in, you paid this sum of money, whether it's a sixpence or 60 pounds, you go to the show, then you've got something to talk about, both to people who went to the show and to people who didn't go to the show. It's a double bonus. And there are people around who won't let you tell them the plots of the motion pictures you've just seen. These are killjoys. There are people around who will say, oh, that's nothing. I saw an act like the one you're talking about several months ago, and a much better act. But, of course, that's still communication if somebody's talking, you see. So we could see a little bit more about this. We're very often astonished to find in the theater this oddity that an individual has been talked about in a very gentle way, not too much discussion about them or one way or the other, and then they pull a horrible boo-boo in private life and everybody goes gab-gab, walla-walla, and the stupid producers always say, well, this person's done something terrible, let's just pull her off, so on. Well, now, actually, once in a while, a person can do enough so that there's a fast gab-gab, walla-walla, and then the public stays away in droves from their pictures. But only if the person is represented as being a very good and saintly person on the screen. Happened to an actress, Ingrid Bergman, who played, unfortunately, Joan of Arc just before she had an illegitimate baby. And while she was busy having the baby, the world premiere of this very expensive picture was released on Broadway to an empty theater. See, that's an oddity. There was too much gap. There's too much departure here. People could not artfully talk about this subject. She wasn't smart enough to make it discussable. See? If she'd been a little bit smoother about the whole thing, why, she could have had some talk going in the baby, too. See? And everybody would have filled up the picture house and away we go. But she evidently stopped communication by the character of her act being different from the character being portrayed. So she, of course, was what? You had an unreality set in so great that she didn't exist. So, of course, you couldn't talk about it. Joan of Arc does not have illegitimate children. So, therefore, the picture and she did not exist. Got it? A man is much safer in life to play the villain in the show. He's always much safer because then no matter what anybody says about him, he, of course, still has reality on which we can get an agreement. And many people recognizing this specialize in villainy for no other reason. They know it's the safe role. You never lose your popularity. Get the idea? Not because people talk about bad things, but just because people ordinarily, in discussing and making nothing out of things, try to downgrade things. The fellow's already sufficiently downgraded, a little bit below optimum or something like that. People will talk about him. Now, the communication is an interesting fact in that it does this strange thing. It as-is-es the things about which one is talking. Communication as is his mass. Now you as an auditor better never take your finger off that. Communication as is his mass. You're going to knock somebody's hat in Mr. Ribbons. Very probably the only reason bodies age is because they talk. New thought? You thought the only reason bodies were in good shape is because they talk. Remember it as is his mass. You got it? Well, now an individual should then be capable, practically, of putting up a new mock-up every time he wants to draw his pay and draws it too thoroughly. The only pay is communication. There's his body. He's making it talk. Very good. The body's talking. Fine. Some of it's going to as-is, one way or the other. I mean, in terms of mass. No, some of it's going to as-is. Well, a good Abel Thetan simply keeps moving a new body in the place of it. You know, he keeps building it up again. It as-is is at the bottom. He says, well, bang, bang, patch, patch, bing. Only sooner or later he gets tired of patch-patching every time he has a conversation. So he does this one. He sets it up on automatic. Got little machines. And he said, each one of these machines, which I don't know I am running, are now going to feed masses of the body. And when I gab-gab, walla-walla too much, why then, of course, these machines are always there. And therefore, if I talk about cowboys and Indians, I'll get a picture of cowboys and Indians, and that will remedy the mass of cowboys and Indians. It's so logical. Isn't that gorgeously logical? Let's just set it up on automatic. Then we never have to worry about this, not even vaguely. Oh, no. Now he's into a new problem. And the problem is he's lost not only his power to not know, but he has delegated his ability to mock up to a bunch of machines. And so he loses the ability to mock up. Now, if we center and exactly represent and articulate the reason why he has all of this machinery feeding masses to him and his pictures and masses and so forth, then we have solved the problem of what he is doing. And having solved it, we can then repair it. You cannot repair a radio set if you do not know its purpose is to receive radio signals. You take a radio set down to the wisest man in Egypt 4,000 years ago, and he would probably have made ornaments out of its tubes and copper wire. One, he could never have found out what it was for because there were no receiving stations around. And two, nobody ever time machined him any wiring diagrams. He wouldn't know what the radio set was for. And that would be a terrific mystery. And that radio set might sit around as being the most mysterious thing, and somebody would say, well, probably that is the product of the crown of Isis. All those glittery things on the front of it there. Very possibly this had a deep significance, and there's a small devil that is in the box, or maybe not talking, the machine would have had no significance at all. Now, a little bit better than that. He would never have repaired the set. Never would have repaired the set. But supposing we had sent a wind-up phonograph back to Egypt that had some actual records, and we'd shown somebody how to play the records, you know, and this wind-up phonograph appeared 4,000 years ago amongst the pyramids and pharaohs and mummies. He could have wound it up and played it, wound it up and played it. Remember, it's now amongst the pyramids and mummies, and there are no spare platters to spin. There are no spare needles. It's a rugged piece of construction, but there are no replacement parts. And after a relatively short time, a finite period of time, you would have had these records played completely smooth, so it would have just sat there and scratched. In addition to that, the needles would have been worn out, as always occurs in any communication mechanism. It wears out. Only a mechanism that does not communicate is practically always there. A rock stays there for a very long time. I call to your attention, a rock mountain will stay there a very long time, except for one type of communication. It would stay there forever. And this rock mountain, of course, goes by the boards under the communication of wind and sand, the communication of heat and cold, and the communication of natural catastrophes. It goes. If it were not touched, if nothing ever flowed, no life approached it, it would be there forever. These asteroids that go spinning round and round are kind of out of communication. They are very hardy in the first place. They do not chew up easily at all, and they are rather out of communication. The only thing that is touching them are a few cosmic rays and a few sunbeams. And these are not very erosive. They do have a stress on them, the communication of the relative gravity of the planets, through which influence they travel. Now, these asteroids, however, are not in very close communication with anything, and they just go round and round the sun, on and on. Follow me. If this preclear of yours never talked, he would always have something to talk with. You follow me? If he never talked, he would always have something to talk with. He would always have a terminal. Now, that terminal, however, has probably been removed a considerable distance in not knowingness, which we might as well say time. It's been removed a considerable distance. It's been moved back into the pyramids of Egypt, as far as know-how on setting it up is concerned. Only it's been removed in the opposite direction. And the know-how of what's it's all about has declined. The actuality is that it's very hard to spot who actually built bodies And a thetan will seldom own up, even under good processing of past caliber, to the ownership or construction of one of his machines. But they're sure fancy machines. They make a phonograph look silly. They are complicated. They got wheels and gears and every other kind of thing. You know, some people think we're just being loose, you know, when we say thetan machinery. Well, we'd also be loose if we said the machinery of the Jaguar Machine Works. You know, that's a loose statement. Same order of magnitude. A thetan does have machinery. It is machinery, and it does some of the darnest things. He powers it on an indirect circuit, which sometimes gets cut. And it turns out, for him, energy masses and new mock-ups and replacements about the things he's talking about. So he thinks about a cow, he gets a mechanism, a picture of a cow to as is as he's talking about the cow, and this maybe gives him a little more body to make a little less body on. You see that? See, this is an interesting mechanism. Well, it's an unfortunate thing that communication as is things, but communication adjusts one on the tone scale. And as one goes without communication, he sinks down and gathers more mass. And then as he gets communication, he rises up scale, but loses the mass. Unless he himself goes up scale and then puts the mass back without going down scale on the mechanism of communication. Now, there's a way to beat this racket. Okay? All you have to do is put an individual into a position or capability where he can restore the masses which are as is, and you will at once have whipped the corrosions of time, which are the corrosions of communication. Now, mummies, I'll go over this again. Mummies stay around for a long time, don't they? Stay around for a long time. Let me call to your attention that they don't talk. It sounds very far-fetched. But mummies which have been found and are talked about start to disintegrate. Interesting, isn't it? So the solution is, to have a mummy, you had better have one that isn't going to be found. Now, if you have a machine that is supposed to repair all of your havingness, then you, too, had better not know about it. If this machine is supposed to be sit there and automatically repair all of your havingness, then the first thing you would do after you got the machine all knocked together would be to forget you had it. Not is it to that degree, throw a not knowingness on it, and for heaven's sake, stop talking about it, because the darn thing is going to cave in. But there is this state. There is a time, I assure you, to locate this machine. And that is when one of two conditions pursue and obtain. One, when the machine is giving you pictures about other subjects than you're talking about. These don't as is. And that just is a cumulative machine, and it simply starts packing in the energy. And then you don't know what the machine is giving you pictures of, and you don't know you have the machine, so you don't know really what you're as ising, and you don't know how this relates to anything else, and you have a thing called hallucination. And the only reason hallucination worries anybody is he knows he's never really going to talk about the pictures the machine's giving him, because if he starts to talk about those pictures, he'll talk about other pictures. I mean, he talks about the pictures he's got, then other pictures will appear, and he doesn't know what they will be, and they are none of them in agreement with anything he wants to talk about. In other words, the machine is not assisting his communication, it's impeding it, because he knows better in this society than to talk about hallucinations. See, you just don't go around talking to all your friends about your hallucinations. Not unless you're a writer. Of course, a hallucination is a self-created a story on paper, could be said to be a hallucination except for this one thing. You know who wrote it. A hallucination only gets real maddening when you're getting the wrong picture at the wrong time and you don't know who or what made it. And then that gets pretty daffy. Then you don't as-is anything. Everybody, sooner or later, has had a machine go haywire. Well, that's certainly a time to tear up the machine and find out about it. That's no time to sit there and let this machine go blong, blong. And the other one, the other time when you want to find out about this machine, no matter how thoroughly you've not knowed it, is when it is no longer in operation. It's a mass sitting someplace. It's now a communication stopper. But in view of the fact that you're not talking with attention directed through it, it doesn't as is. And after a few busted machines have clapped upon some preclear's head, or after a few machines have started to produce blackness because he started to talk about too much blackness and then got worried he didn't know what the heck the machine was doing, and it kept feeding him blackness every time he thought of blackness, and he was getting more blackness than he could talk about, and so he didn't talk about blackness anymore. You get the idea? But that belongs in the first category. That's a misproducing machine. When he starts to talk about lightness, it goes on producing blackness. You see, you got a fixed machine. Well, these are two conditions under which you would like to know about the machine. But there's another echelon that is higher and more important than this. Even more important than this. And that is, those things which fail to assist the individual to receive pay, communication, are, of course, a liability to the individual. Those things which assist him in communicating, of course, are valuable to the individual and are helpful and assistive to him, no matter if they're horrible. Anything which assists him to communicate, he then considers good. Assists him to communicate. And anything which retards him in communicating is then, from our standpoint, to be considered bad. So we get the finite limits of processing very easily. Processing should regulate itself, no matter what scheme or system is used, to enhance and increase the abundance of all of the points in the communication formula. And you could say, what should processing do? What should it do? It should improve communication. Now, of course, communication is going to disappear entirely if you flip the thetan into a native state. You understand that? So that doesn't improve communication. He doesn't get paid at all. He won't like it either. And the other fact is to increase the abundance of communication in all of its parts. And if you increase the abundance of communication in all of its parts, you, of course, are not going to as-is everything in sight, because you're also going to have to supply terminals which will as-is. Now, the dream of a thetan is to have an entirely indestructible communication terminal which is yet mobile. Sounds peculiar. He actually wants something that he can't as-is. By what? Communication. So we get individuals tailoring themselves up at the most remarkable things. We have knights dashing up and down wearing tin suits, which were hot, and when they got fleas in them, were maddening. Now, when we have a process which increases the abundance of communication in any of its parts, we have a good process, so long as it doesn't at the same time inhibit communication in too many other parts. So we could increase somebody's intentions in such a way as to as is all of his terminals. Got that? We could increase his intentions with a process which as is all of his terminals. We could increase his number of things to talk to at the expense of his space, which is necessary to communication. We could get all kinds of things to talk to and more things to talk to, and he wouldn't eventually have any space left. And thus we get the actual limits, if they could be called such, of Scientology processing, the goal of which is to assist the preclear in getting paid in the game called communication. Now that this pay is very worthwhile is a thing you should never for a moment doubt. An individual will stop communicating when he can no longer afford to as is. See, he just has got his mechanisms and so forth are so thoroughly unbalanced that he can no longer really afford to as is anything. And he stops creating terminals at a moment when he cannot utilize them in communication. Or he tries to stop creating terminals at a moment when he has terminals which don't communicate or he can't communicate about, see? He tries to keep this adjusted, and he goes out of adjustment on this formula and no longer gets paid. Now, is communication pay valuable? Is the pay called communication valuable? Does communication actually have any slightest inherent goodness that is rewardful? I want to call to your attention that the entirety of sexual sensation in the whole second dynamic is communication. Well, that's a very interesting thing. It's communication of very close proximity toward a certain definite goal and purpose. It's very much in a game, you see. It's a very pat game all by itself. It's a type of communication. And any sensation involved therein must be communication sensation. There's no other way to do it. All right. Now, let's take up something a little closer than that. Eating. Did food ever taste good? Did food ever taste good to you at all? Well, if food or drink ever tasted good to you, even vaguely, that must then be capable of being experienced through communication, because it in itself is a very close proximity communication. Well, now, do all communications to feel good and to taste good be of this close proximity? The proximity of closing the terminal with your terminal, you see, is not really necessary. It's not really necessary for the sensation. Now, it's a quite odd thing that communication itself, just as communication and an interchange of thoughts and ideas, can rise as a sensation to, and taste and flavor, you might say, to a greater height than sex or food. Gives you something to think about, then. So an individual is out of communication to the degree that he is no longer willing or able to as-is things by communication, and thus he's being very, very sparing of his communication, and thus communication no longer really feels good to him, so there is a level of the tone scale where he has to preserve himself so that he can still communicate, but communication is, to him, not very flavorful. You know, it's sort of like you have to keep on eating soup, but there's nothing in the soup to taste. Or there is maybe some seasoning, but no meat or vegetables in the soup. And the seasoning might not be pleasant in that state at all. So a fellow could get it to an ebb where he couldn't be paid. The game, the pay. The game is communication. The pay is more communication. So all you're trying to do is put your preclear into a position where he can be paid for living. If he doesn't enjoy living, he simply does not have any pleasant sensation connected with communication. That's all. But he has hopes, and he hopes someday that he might have. And these beautiful sensations and beautiful periods that people have had and experienced are big communication wins, and they try to keep these things in the bank. They're being paid. That is pay. These ecstatic excitements and so forth. He just momentarily permitted somebody to communicate really full out, and he communicated really full out. And it was delicious, but he didn't have much mock-up left. Thank you.